So there's a Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, which is, you know, very likely might be the most well-known Ramban, most often quoted Ramban al HaTorah. It's probably one of maybe two or three choices of the most famous Ramban. Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim explains that the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu is an inyan of precious from indulging, from overindulgence. And the Ramban says that although the Torah makes a lot of Yisurim, but even with all the Yisurim the Torah makes, a person could live a life that's really full of indulgence and really devote his life to nothing other than indulging in the pleasures of this world without ever being, you know, stepping over a line of any of the official Yisurim. And there's a famous term that the Ramban uses over there, novel b'shus HaTorah, that it might have been possible to be a novel, really disgusting person, without violating the Torah. So the Torah gives a mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu. Kedoshim Tiyu means that in addition to whatever else I asked, you're supposed to also look at all those mitzvahs and get a picture, get a sense, a flavor of what I want you to be, and then try to be that. And the Mela, one who's a novel, is not b'shus HaTorah. It's interesting. It's often misquoted. I think people understand, people sometimes quote that Ramban, that the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim says it's possible to be a novel b'shus HaTorah. It's really not. The Ramban means that had it not been for the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu, it would be possible to be a novel b'shus HaTorah. But the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu says that you're not allowed to do that. So if somebody would be living like that, it would be a violation of the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu. But anyway, be that as it may, that's the context. The discussion of the Ramban at the beginning of the parasha. And there's a particular line that I want to zero in on where he's discussing this theme, and he says that, you know, the Torah doesn't have such strict rules about what you're allowed to talk about, what you're not allowed to talk about. But naturally, the more that a person talks about holy things, the holier he is, and the more that a person talks about very lowly things, so the lowlier he is. And then he writes, "Omru olav al Reb Chiya." The Chazal said about Reb Chiya, that he never spoke a word of Sicha B'Tela. Ramban doesn't define for us exactly what Sicha B'Tela is, but the general idea would seem to be probably something that isn't Divrei Torah. It doesn't have to do with Kedushin, Avodas Hashem. It's just mundane matters. Does it include things that are important, or does it mean only jokes? Not so clear, but there's this idea of using your words very carefully and only talking about what's important, and that's part of the precious and chasidus that the Ramban is describing here. And he says it about Reb Chiya. Omer olav al Reb Chiya, shelo yitzach sicha b'teila
miyamav. He didn't have WhatsApp.
Exactly, right. I guess, okay, then...
He was an Amora, right?
Reb Chiya was sort of in between. He was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and the Rebbe of Rav. So we have Rav Tanu, who probably, but he's an Amora. Reb Chiya is... I guess, he's not mentioned in Mishnah. So I guess that makes him an Amora. He's more of an Amora than a Tanu, but he's definitely very borderline. So the Ramban says...
He's Rav's Rebbe.
Yeah.
Rav Tana Palig, right?
So what he's most known for is his braces. He had a collection of braces. So now I wanna, you know, the Ramban's point, of course, is to give us Divrei Hesoiris about Kedusha and Precious. That's not where I'm focusing on. The Ramban says it's about Reb Chiya. And it's strange because nobody knows where this Ramban comes from. There's no Gemara anywhere that says about Reb Chiya, Shlai Sach Sicha B'Teilu Miyamav. But what's particularly strange is that the Ramban is not the first person to make up something or appear to make up something like this about somebody, but because we find also a Rambam that says something, but not the same thing as the Rambam, but equally mysterious. The Rambam in Hilchas Deis, the Rambam is talking about the Mida, the same Mida that the Ramban is focusing on, the Mida of Shtika, of not talking frivolously. He says the Derech of a Chacham, that he just says what's important, and Kol Ksil Barayv Dvarim, he quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, that a fool is always chattering, but a Chacham makes sure that his words are concise and precise, and that they carry a lot of meaning, right? Dvarim Mu'atim, Inyanehim, Merubim. And in the middle of that, then he brings the Mishnah in Avos, where it says, "Lematasla guf toiv l'shtika and siyag l'chachma shtika." And in the middle of all that, the Ramban says, "Amru alav al Rav Talmud Rabbeinu Hakadosh shloi sach sicha b'teila miyamav." That Rav never spoke sicha b'teila. If you take a look at the Kesef Mishnah on that Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah says, "I don't know where the Rambam found that. There's no such Gemara." You know where there's a Gemara? There is a Gemara that talks about this midah of Lo Yisach Sichah B'Teila Miyamav. It's in Sukkah Daf Chaf Ches about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai over there says, they said about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that he never talked Sichah B'Teila, and the Gemara over there also says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a Talmud, Rabbi Eliezer, and he said about himself that he followed in his Rebbe's footsteps, and he also was Lo Yisach Sichah B'Teila Miyamav. So there are two Choshev HaTanayim that do get described this way. But the Rambam who says it about Rav, so the Kesef Mishnah writes on this Rambam, Ka'es Lo Matzasi. I have not yet found any makar to this Rambam. I don't know where the Rambam got it from.
Wasn't it Rav that someone hid under his bed to hear?
Yes. We're going to come to this Gemara in a moment. Yeah. So now that just makes this Ramban twice as strange. Like there's something really mysterious, as if there's this, I don't know, epidemic of misattributions of or it's not misattributions, presumably there's other makaris that we don't know about, but the Rambam said it about Rav and the Ramban says it about Rav Chia, and nobody could find the makar for either one. Now, okay, but putting the Ramban on the back burner and just focusing more on this Rambam, Rambam says Rav Leisach Sichah B'Teila Miyamav, the Ramban, the Kesef Mishnah says Ka'eis Le'Matzasi, I don't know of any makar for this, but a number of Achrayim have sort of collected Gemaras, which some say might have been the Rambam's Makar, some say no, this wasn't the Rambam's Makar, but at any rate, they do put together a picture of Rav that this was a theme of his. So the first one is the Gemara that you were just referring to. It's the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Hey Amabez, where the Gemara brings the Pasuk, Magid La'adam Masichai. Where's the Pasuk? I don't remember. It's in Navi, maybe Yeshaya. Magid La'adam Masicha, it's talking about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so demanding, so exacting, that he tells a person Masicha, and the Gemara elaborates, and it's Rav. Rav said, I'm a Rav, what does it mean, Magid La'adam Masicha? Afilu Sicha Kal Sicha Yesera, Shebein Ish L'Ishtoi, Magid La'adam B'Shas Misasai. That when a person dies, he's gonna have to answer for every last word, and the Gemara, the way that Rav dramatizes that every last word is afilu sicha yaseir shemein ish leishtai, meaning b'shas tashmish. Even that, the Gemara means to say that's included in this midah of being careful about what you say, how much you say. Then the Gemara tells a story, which makes this a very memorable Gemara. It's a Gemara once, you know, if you've learned it once, it's hard to forget. The Gemara tells that Rav had a Talmud, Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana one time snuck in and hid underneath Rav's bed and was there when Rav was there with his wife, and he spoke up in the middle, and he said, Dummy Rav, command the late time and tafshila. He thought that Rav was approaching it with a lot of gusto, and he objected. He said, you know, I'm surprised to see that you're so... Let's just leave with the word gusto. To which Rav responded, Kahana, poik, lav ayachara. He said, Kahana, get out of here. This is not derachara. You're not supposed to be there. But Rav Kahana responded, and the Gemara gives Rav Kahana the last word. The Gemara says, that Amar Lei, Rav Kahana said, Teirihi v'lum l'anani tzarech. As if to say, no, this is a part of the Torah. I have to learn how to conduct oneself in all areas of life, and you are my Rebbe, so I'm allowed. And the Gemara seems to give him the last word. So, I guess not, yeah. Or that was the
chasen class.
Okay. Al kapanim, the Gemara. So the Gemara asked it as a kasha on Rav. Here, Rav just said that you should be very careful of his afilu zichisay shabinish lishtai. Where magid la'adam b'shas misasai. Don't say an extra word. And yet, it seemed like he was very liberal with how he approached it. So then the Gemara answers, it's not a stira. The Gemara says that's not Yisera. If it's necessary, then it's not Yisera. That's the right way to do it. Okay, that's the Gemara over there. The Tzarech L'Ritzui. But al kapanim, you see this member of Rav. Rav is the one that's on record as saying that a person needs to be careful with how much he says and don't say more than you need to say. And there's a second Gemara. Sukkah Daf Chav Ches. It's talking about the pasuk in Tehillim, V'hoya ke'etz shasul al pal yamayim asher puryo yitim bi'itay v'alehu lo yibayl. And the Gemara says, we're talking about a Talmud Chacham. He's like a tree in by pools of water. And it describes various aspects of the Talmud Chacham. What's the end of the pasuk? V'alehu, and the leaf, lo yibayl, doesn't rot. The leaf is the least important part of a fruit tree. But even the leaf doesn't rot. Like there's some chashivos even to the least important part of the fruit tree. And the whole Gemara had been interpreting it as a medrash for the Talmidei Chachamim. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, v'alehu lo yibayl, afilu sichas chulin shel Talmid Chacham tzarech Talmud? That if you have a Talmud Chacham, then even if you hear him schmoozing after, you could study every word. You could learn from each word of the Talmud Chacham. Who says that memra? It's Rav. Rav is the one that says, afilu sichas chulin shel Talmud Chacham. Rav, who was so careful about his words, again, the Rambam quotes it that biographically, that's how Rav lived. In the Gemara, we don't see that, but Rav is the one that taught us that you're going to have to give a din v'cheshbon for every word that you say, even all the extra words. And Rav is the one that said that siches chulin shel Talmid Chacham tzarech Talmud. And then there's a third statement, a third Gemara. This is Pesachim Daf Gimel. All three Gemaras are in Ma'id. Pesachim Daf Gimel. La'olam yishna adam talmidei derech katzara. That a person should always teach his Talmud in the shortest way. Use concise words to teach a halacha to your Talmidim. So Rashi says that that's because Teresh Shabbat Peh was memorized, and the fewer words there are, the easier it is to memorize. According to Rashi's interpretation, it has nothing to do with the theme that we're talking about. It's specifically a strategy in Talmud Torah and memorization. What? It's just a practical. But the Rambam argues with Rashi, because the Rambam does not bring this down in Hilchas Talmud Torah. He brings it down in Hilchas Deis. Hilchas Deis means Hilchas Midos, like how you're supposed to live. And it's in the same paragraph that we were quoting from before, where he says, Amr Lav al Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Shalai Sach Sich B'Tehil Miyamav. Over there he says that, you know, after saying that you should always try to stay quiet and do more listening than talking, he says, and even in Divrei Torah, when you're teaching your Talmidim, you should always teach a B'derech Katsara and make sure that your words are Dvarim Muatim V'inyonehem Merubim. Few words packed with a lot of meaning, as opposed to, he says, the way of Ksil is that there's a lot of words with very little meaning. So, according to the Rambam, this teaching of Yishna Adon Tamid Derech Katsara is the same theme, again, as the Sichas Chulin Shel Talmid Chacham Tzarech Talmud, and Magen Adam HaSichas, Sichas Herish HaBeinu Shel Ishtei, and who's the one that says it? It's Rav again. This Gemara Pesachim Daf Gimel, La'ayum Yishna Adon Tamid Derech Katsara, is Amar Rav. So there's three members from Rav that all contribute to this picture of Rav being somebody who took his words very seriously, the chashivas of a word. So some achrayim say, some bring one, some bring another of these gemaras and say, oh, maybe that was the Rambam's makar. As the makar, it's maybe shvach, because the Rambam says, Amru Alav al Rav. None of these gemaras are an Amru Alav al Rav. These are impressions that we could form about Rav based on the things that he said. So it still seems like the Rambam maybe had a different makar.
Is that what the Rambam? I'm sorry. What did the Rambam say that Rav was short in words?
Right. But
so why couldn't you learn from those? I don't understand.
Well, because the Gemara, the Rambam says Amru Alav al Rav, that he was Leisach Sichah B'Tehil Miyamav. They said about Rav, who said it about Rav? If it's just that Rav said this and Rav said that, and from that I, the Rambam, could figure out that that's the way he lived, so the Rambam's the one that's saying it about Rav. This sounds
Or the generations between Rav and the Rambam.
Okay, so other people said it before the Rambam. Okay, but it's not in writing anywhere. Uh-huh. It's not in writing anywhere. What?
It was in Sichas Cholent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
didn't say
I hear it. So maybe he just means that this is something that my Rebbeim said, or the Talmidei Chacham of earlier generations. Maybe. Yeah, I think most people assume that Amar Olav means that Chazal said it about Rav. You have these three Gemaras. Again, whether or not this is the Rambam's Makar, but definitely they all corroborate the statement of the Rambam that is the way Rav lived. And then there's a couple of Gemaras that I mentioned, that the Achronim bring up, two Gemaras that is, you know, you learn the Gemara, you may not pay so much attention to it, but if you're keeping track of who's who and, you know, who Rav was, it makes a lot more sense. There's a Gemara in Chulin, in the sugya of Noisin Tam Bar Noisin Tam, right? Alamdish a sugya in this, right, not Bar Not. Alamdish a discussion in the sugyas of Taruvis, of Kashrus, if you have something that was cooked, something parev that came into contact with fleishigs, and then afterwards it comes into contact with milchigs, so is that a problem, or do we say that that since it's already a second degree tam, so it's disappeared already? The Gemara tells a story that one time Rav was by his grandchild, so he's probably an older person already, and they were preparing medicine for him, eye medication, and they were using a bowl to mix the plaster that they were going to put into his eye. They prepared the medicine in the bowl, he took his medicine, then they scraped it off, threw it out, and then they served supper in the same bowl. And Rav was eating his supper and didn't taste so good. He said, "Yoiv tam kuli hai. Look how strong the taste is. It gives so much taste." The Gemara says, "Oh, from here we see that Rav holds that not bar not is asar." Now, he was just making a comment. He was just talking about how the food tasted. But from here we see that not bar not is asar. So I kind of want to say that, you know, maybe they wouldn't have made that diuk if it was a bayu or rabu or rabu or vesev. But Rav, who said afilu sichas chul and shaltam inichom, tzarech Talmud, so if he's commenting on how the food tastes, tzarech Talmud, you have to learn something from it. Why did he say that? It must be that he came to teach us that a second degree nice in tam is still nice in tam. So from here he said, not bernat is asar. And there's a similar Gemara, this is in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Dalet, where the Gemara is discussing a klisha machtel iser, and Hilchas Tiltol on Shabbos. So there's different categories of kelim, a klisha machtel heter, a klisha machtel iser. They're all not mukta because they're kelim, but so you're allowed to be metaltel them, but there are limitations about what kind of tiltol you could do. Certainly, on a klisha machtel iser is more limited than a klisha machtel heter. And then there's tzerech atzmoy, which is not allowed. There's tzerech gufay, tzerech mekaymai. La halacha, we paskin that you're allowed to be metalzal in tzerech gufay and tzerech mekaymai. But that tzerech mekaymai is more debatable. So in the Gemara, it's being discussed. And then the Gemara tells a story. That one time, Rav was giving shir on Shabbos, and the Talmidim were coming to listen, but it was a standing room only crowd. And Rav Kahana didn't have a seat. This is the same Rav Kahana. I guess he goes back on Rav's good side. Or maybe this was before the story under the bed. Because Rav saw that Rav Kahana didn't have a seat. So he said, bring over that grinder and put it here so that Rav Kahana could sit down. So the Gemara said that implies that Rav holds that a klisha malachta l'isser is only mutal tzerech gufay, not mutal tzerech makaymai. What's the tiyuk? So Rashi explains, because he said l'meisav alei, so that he could sit down. He could have just said, bring the grinder here. And then Rav Kahana would sit down. But he spoke out, l'meisavalei, so that he could sit down. Oh, you see that it's only because he wanted it l'tzerech gufoy, that's why he was telling him to move the grinder. But if it was only l'tzerech mekaymai and not l'tzerech gufoy, he wouldn't have told him to move the grinder. Could we make that dig from everybody? That's mamash sichas chulin. But this is Rav talking. Rav said up in the sichas chulin shal d'incham tzerech Talmud. So in Rav's sichas chulin, we can make the yukim. So there's two Gemaras where you see the Gemara.
Why does sichas chulin?
He said, bring the grinder for Rav Kahana to sit down on.
But that's l'tzarek. It's not as... Sichas chulin implies an unnecessary.
No,
he could have just said, bring over the grinder. Why did he have to tell us what he wants it for? Right, the extra two words, yeah. So all these Gemaras, they all reinforce this idea that Rav had this midah. So he was not one for schmoozing, so like sachsicha v'teila. But again, as for a makur for the Rambam, I think most Achrayim feel that the implication of the Rambam is that it says this somewhere about Rav, and that we still haven't found. So there were Achrayim that said that, you know, the most likely explanation is that the Rambam had some medrash where it says this, and we don't have it anymore. There are a lot of, it's not unusual for Rishonim to quote things from Midrashim, and, you know, the Midrash, These Divrei Torah, where obviously everything is handwritten, right? They're all in manuscripts. And not everything was such a classic that there were hundreds of copies that were made all over. There were sometimes manuscripts that there were just a few copies of. And they were handed down and people learned them. But then, you know, there's just a few copies. And then there's expulsions and massacres and book burnings and other such things. So they get destroyed, they get lost, they get confiscated. And we don't have them anymore. So such things happen sometimes. So it seems likely that the Rambam had such a medrash. So people imagined that there was a medrash somewhere where it talked about Rav, and it said his hanhagas, and over there it said that he never spoke sicha b'teila. Where the medrash got it from is already not surprising. You know, we do have a lot of evidence in the Talmud Bavli that would indicate that. But if the Lashon of the Rambam is mashma that he found it somewhere in Chazal, so the most likely explanation was that there's some medrash about it and we lost it. The truth is that there's a second Rambam that also is suggestive of this, because the Rambam in Hilchas Tefillin, when he's talking about the Kedusha of Tefillin, he says, Amru Olav al Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, again, the same Lashon, Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, that he never went for Amis without Tefillin, Tzitzis, and Divrei Torah. And this also, we don't have a Gemara about this. There's no Gemara that says that says it's about Rav. It says, it's interesting, the first one we find about Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh, that was the case of Mishnah Sa'ara. That same Gemara does say something similar about Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh, but not with the tzitzis part, I don't think. That, I don't know if we find anywhere. But the Rambam quotes such a thing about Rav. And that also, although the Kesef Mishnah over there for some reason doesn't say anything, but over there, the other Chayim say, there's no such Gemara. So now there's two places where the Rambam has an Amru Olav al Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and he brings something that it doesn't say in the Talmud Bavli or in the Talmud Yerushalmi. So it seems most likely that there was some other Maimar Chazal, you know, one of the Gishmaka ones that people wonder about is this age-old question, did the Rambam have Talmud Yerushalmi on Seder Kachim? We don't have a Talmud Yerushalmi on Seder Kachim, right? There's a famous story that 100 something years ago somebody made one up, a very clever fraud, but it was a fraud. We don't have a Talmud Yerushalmi on Seder Kachim. Was there never a Talmud Yerushalmi on Seder Kachim? It seems a little bit surprising. You know, when they were learning in Eretz Yisrael, why would they be skipping Kachim? They have a Zerayim, but maybe not. Maybe they didn't have a Kachim. Why said the Amid Rayim, or after the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash? But maybe there was. And there are a few places where people talk about an indication that maybe the Rambam had such a manuscript. But whether or not, okay, so that's one possibility that people wonder about. But whether or not he did have that, he could have had something, some mm-hmm. kind of a medrash that talks about things that Rav did. So from these two Rambams, there's an implication that the Rambam had such a medrash somewhere. And we don't have it, but he had it, and in that medrash it said these two things. Lo and behold, in the 1800s, such a medrash actually got found. There's in the Sefer Shari Tshuva, not the famous Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yehuda, not the second most famous Shari Tshuva that's on the page of the Shulchan Aruch. There's lots and lots of Sfarim that have been called Shari Tshuva. But there was a Sefer that was a collection of Tshuvas from the Goinim that was printed in the early 1800s, I'm not sure, maybe the late 1700s. Yeah, I take it back. I think it's in the 1700s. It's quoted in the Seder HaTeiris. So it must be in the 1700s. Let's make it. I don't know exactly when and where, but in terms of the Achrayim, 1700s, I think, there was a collection of writings from the Goinim called Shari Tshuva. And, I mean, the publisher called it Shari Tshuva, but he found a collection of writings from the times of the Goinim. And if you take a look at Simin Kuf Ayin Ches in that Sefer, it is a list called Eser Mili de Chasidusa Shenohag Bohem Rav. 10 pious practices of Rav. So this L'chaira is the missing medrash that we were looking for. Everybody got the impression that the Rambam had this medrash about Milim Yechasidusa of Rav, but we didn't know where he was getting it from. Their taka was in the times of the Gaonim. Where did they get it from exactly? You know, what was it part of? I don't know. But it was something that was in writing in the times of the Gaonim. So undoubtedly the Rambam had it. And this is where he got this material from. That was everybody's initial reaction when they saw, oh, in the Shari Tshuva, there's this Milim Yechasidusa of Rav. That must be the Rambam's Makar. Problem is that if you take a look in that list of Esamil de Chassidusa, it doesn't have this. So it just compounds the mystery, because here there was this strange Rambam where he was quoting something, a practice of Rav. We don't know where he got it from. Then we discovered that there's actually a collection of practices of Rav.
But it didn't have this one.
So it was such a geshmak ahavamina that people didn't want to give up on it so fast. There was speculation that maybe.
What does it say in there?
I'll go through what I can remember. Maybe all the ten, but there was some speculation that maybe the version that we have is faulty and there's a line missing, and the Rambam had that line, and the one that the Rambam writes is the one that we're missing, and. The basis to say that is because, you know, it numbers them. It says the first one is this, and the second one is that, and the third one is that. Then when it gets to the fourth and fifth, it says the fourth and the fifth, and then it says something that looks like maybe it's only one thing. Because it says, what it says is that the Rav was makbid never to look to the sides, and even forward not to look out of his dalet amos. Now, is that one milsa de chasidusa, or is that two milsa de chasidusa? It could very well be one, right? That he never looked around. He kept his eyes down. Shmir Sinayim. He kept his eyes to himself. He kept his eyes down. He didn't look around. Not to the right, not to the left, not in front of him, not behind him. The way it speaks it out is not to the sides and also, and even not in front of him. But maybe that's all one, that he didn't look around. He didn't look anywhere. If that's all one, so then we're missing one, because it calls that fourth and the fifth. So when you read the manuscript, it actually looks like there's one missing. So perfect, that must be the one that the Rambam was quoting. The Rambam had another line there, and it was about not talking Sikha Vatela. So this theory, I think a number of people assumed it, but it's expressed very clearly by the Radzina Rebbe. The Radzina Rebbe wrote a pirush on this Esamilin de Chassidusa. He tried to go through each of the ten and find places in the Gemara or in other known writings of Chazal where we find indications of this midah. And so he wrote this pirish, and over here he says that there's got to be something missing over here, because it says he didn't look to the sides and he didn't even look in front of him. That's not two milas. That's one mila. So there must be something missing. That must be the Rambam. It was supposed to say, like, Sachsich Batela. So, okay, you know, that may be. There's somebody that I went to yeshiva with, named, I think some of you are familiar with him, because I understand he has a kind of public profile, Eliezer Brot. If the name is familiar to anyone, he was in yeshiva with me. He's a Svarim guy, exactly. He's a Svarim guy. He's basically sitting and learning, but he has a particular expertise of approaching the learning from a bibliographical point of view, to like keep track of, I don't know how to describe exactly what his specialty is, but I guess, you know, different Svarim, what was printed when, who had access to what, those kinds of studies. And he's a professor in Bar Ilan University, in Talmud, and he basically sits and learns, I think. But you know, this is his expertise. So he writes on these kinds of things, and he has an article about this Rambam, and over there he says that it can't be right, this theory that there's a line missing from the Esamilu de Chassidusa, and the Rambam had a version that had an additional one, the Lotzach Sikha Batela. Says it can't be right, because maybe it made sense in the 1800s, but by now there's not just one old source for this Esamilu de Chassidusa. It's just not just the Shari Tshuva. We've already have, I think he goes through four or five different places where people have found it in old sources, and they're all written the same. They all say the fourth and the fifth is that he didn't look to the sides and didn't look in front of him. So clearly it meant to be counting that as two, one to the sides and one in front of him. And they're similar to each other, so that's why it says the fourth and the fifth. But there's nothing, if there was something missing, so when you get multiple versions from that were written and got lost in different places in the ancient world at different times, so the mistake, you know, the copyist error in one wouldn't be in all of them. But so if they're all written the same way, then that would indicate that it was really never there. So the mystery remains unsolved. Where did the Rambam get this from? The Rav was like Sachtich B'Teilu B'Yamav. Maybe it is from those Gemaras that we mentioned before, or maybe there's still yet another undiscovered Medrash. I don't know. But be that as it may, the Rambam says this about Rav. We do seem to get a feeling for this personality of Rav. And the discussion brings us to this medrash about the Esamil and Dechas Hedusa. So we're gonna go on with that. Well, we're gonna talk a little bit more because you asked what are the Esamil and Dechas Hedusa. We'll come to that. I guess just before we go there, one very interesting thing about the Leisach Zicha Batela. There's this piece that I come to. There's a Chassam Sefer which I came to thanks to Rav Shirley Borenstein. He spoke this out on a Gemara in Gittin. There's a Gemara in Gittin at the very, very end of Masechet Gittin, Daf Pei Tes, where it talks about if there's a koil that somebody is married, so do we treat her as an Eishes Ish? And in that sugya, there's a discussion about Mevatlin on Kala or Loi Mevatlin on Kala. Well, basin actively try to suppress a koil. People are saying things, according to this one pshat in Rashi, means if we know that things are not true, but people are saying it, will we try to suppress it? Mm-hmm. And the Gemara says that Besura in Sura were Mavatal Akoil, and in Naharda were not Mavatal Akoil. And the Rosh writes that apparently the populations in these cities had different standards for their koils. In Sura, they were less careful about what they said, so they were lay mavatal koil. And in Narda, they were more careful about what they said, so they were not mavatal koil. So Chassam Sofer said that, you know, Sura and Narda, Rav and Shmuel, Rav was the Rashiv of Sura, Shmuel was the Rashiv of Narda. Now, at first it sounds like it's going backwards, right? Because the Rosh is telling us that in Sura, they weren't careful about what they said. So the way the Chassam Sefer explains it is as follows. Rav Amru Olav Rav Talmud Beinu HaKadosh that Leisach Sicha B'Teilu Miyamav. Azayzak the Rambam. So that means that the people of Sura, their Rav never talked Sicha B'Teilu. He never schmoozed. So they never got guidance in the right way to schmooze. They had no chinuch in Sicha B'Teilu. So you can't expect everybody in the city to be like Rav that was Leisach Sicha B'Teilu. People have a natural need for Sicha B'Teilu. But if you live with a Rav who's a little more, let's say, normal in this respect, so then you emulate your Rav in terms of how you talk Sicha B'Teilu. You get a chinuch in that also. But in Sura, where Rav was Leisach Sicha B'Teilu Miyamav, so they didn't know how to talk Sicha B'Teilu, so their Sicha B'Teilu was worse than anybody else's. So they were making up koilos about people. So therefore, in Sura, we're mavatal koil. But in Arda, where they had chinuch in their sicha v'teilu, so they were not mavatal koil. So some cipher, getting that pay test. Yeah. Anyway, well, so coming back to this medrash about the Esam Mila de Chassidusa. So what were they? I'm not sure I'll remember all 10, but we'll get most of them. It says that he never walked for Amis Bekoim Bezakufa. Right, standing straight up. He's supposed to be bent over like in a show of humility. He never walked for Amis Begili HaRoish with his head uncovered. The two that we mentioned before, he didn't look around. He didn't look to the sides. He didn't look in front of him. It says that he was Makbid on Shalish Sudais. Now that's interesting, right? Because everybody thinks of that as a halacha. I mean, that's a din, shalish sudais. So maybe it means that he had some kind of a hiddur that he would make sure that all of them were, that even the third suda was a geshmaka suda. I don't know. It says that he was, I think the lashon is that he was rugel b'shalish sudais. And there's another one about suda that that he never ate at a Sudas Rishus. Now, the Lashon is he never ate. I think it means he never ate flesh eggs. What do I say? I think it means that because it goes on to say, because of Chelev and Dam and Giranasha. So what it sounds like it means is that he would, because he had kashrus problems, that anytime there'd be fleishigs, you're getting involved in shilas of kashrus. So he was makbid not to eat except at a sudas mitzvah. Now, again, I don't know exactly what to make of that. Obviously, if you really have a chashash with your that it's not kosher, then you can't eat at a sudas mitzvah either. But it was a chassidus to be extra makbid, but at a sudas mitzvah, you know. So at a seem he so he only ate fleishigs at a sudas mitzvah. Okay, I should. How many is that? I think that's six. It says, it's right, the two about the going for Ramas, the two about Sudois, the two about looking around, the six. It says that he was Ruggel Betfillin. That also is not clear what it means, Ruggel Betfillin. We mentioned that the Rambam quotes that he never went for Ramas without that he never went for Ramas without Tefillin. And you know, maybe he was getting, like some people speculate, that the Rambam's secret source was from this Medrash. Over here it doesn't say what it means, but it says he was Ruggel Betfillin. It says that another one that says over there is that when he would come into the Beis Medrash, he wouldn't walk through the crowd, which would cause everybody to stand up for him. He would walk around the perimeter so that people didn't have to get up for him. Also says over there that if he would find out that somebody had, this one is straight out of a Gemara in Yuma, if he would find out that somebody was upset at him for something, so he would always make it his business to go there. Does it say it? For him to be mafayis him? So which way it says for whom to be advised, but he'll make sure to go there so that they could talk about it. How many is that? Does anybody know? That's eight.
Seven, eight, yeah.
And it says.
It says
one more that I remember. I'm trying to remember the one that I'm, if I'm missing one. But anyway, one more that I remember that it says is that he had a nice voice. In his Mila Chassidusa, it says he had a nice voice, and he would use it to daven for the Amud, and to be a meturgeman in the shir, right? That's the person who would project the shir, the person that was saying the shir. His uncle, Reb Chia, was, I guess, he had a softer voice, or he was an old man, his voice was very weak. So the person who was the Magid Shir would have a young guy with a big, powerful voice standing next to him that would project it to the whole audience. So Rav would do those two jobs, the Baal Tefila and the Meturgamon, because he had a nice voice. And it ends off, that's the tenth one, and it ends off by saying, as it says, the Pasuk Kabbalah Hashem Mehincha, and he would interpret that Kabbalah Mehincha means that whatever your treasure is, you should use it to honor Hashem. And he would interpret it Kabbalah Hashem Megrincha, use your throat to Mehincha Hashem, because that was his hoin. That was his treasure, because he was very gifted in that way. So these are the 10 things that are mentioned there, but that's half of the piece. Because the piece says that there were 10 Mila de Chassidusa, and it lists what the 10 are. But then it also tells a story. And it says that when Rav died, so his Talmidim wanted to perpetuate his holy practices. But his Talmidim realized that it was hopeless. There's no way that anybody could do all that. It's too much. So they decided they're going to divide it up among all the Talmidim, and individual Talmidim would take one or another of the Milud Chassidusa of Rav. So that's the other half of the thing. It has for each one that Rav did this, and then when he died, so and so took it over. This one, Rav Kahana took over, and this one, Rav Nachman took over. Rav Nachman's not a Talmud of his, but I think he's mentioned there anyway. I don't know, Abaye is mentioned over there. So he's also not really a Talmud. I don't know. But it says for each one who took over. So the I think the first place that is published is in the Shari Tshuva, which you can find that. That's a collection of Tshuvas of Gainim.
and it's in Kuf Ayin Ches over there. It's also brought down. One of the places that it's been brought down is in the Sefer HaParadis, which is a collection of teachings of Rashi, not written by Rashi, but it's people have collected things that Talmidei Rashi wrote b'shem Rashi. And the Sefer HaParadis has this, which is interesting because that suggests that Rashi had access to this this thing of Esa Mil de Chasidusa, right? So we have an indication that the Rambam had one, and now there's an indication that Rashi had one. I'll tell you another indication that Rashi had one. There's a Gemara at the very, very end of Maseches Menachos, last daf of Maseches Menachos, daf Kuf Yud, where the Gemara says that Rav said a drasha, a very interesting drasha, not Arinian, but he sort of says that the world is divided into two halves. There's the civilized half. He says, you know, if it's west of Tzur and east of Carthage, so that's the civilized half, and that's where people know about the Ribbono Shel Olam. And beyond those limits, that's the uncivilized half. Over there, people don't know anything about the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it says that his grandson, Reb Simi, asked Rav, what do you mean? But there's a pasuk, the pasuk of Malachi, that says, "B'chol makom muktur mugash l'shmi," that indicates that Hashem's name is known all over the world. So, and then the Gemara says that Amalei, Rav responded and he said, "Simi at? You're Simi?" And then he went down and gave his answer. I didn't show him what the answer is. What did he mean by those two words, "Simi at"? So there's a Rashi, the Rambam called "Simi at," and Rashi says, one pshat is that he meant to say, what kind of bad cash is that? See, you're seeing me, I expect better of you. But then Rashi says the other pshat is because it's written that Rav never used to look around. He never used to look even in front of him. So he didn't know who was talking to him. But it sounded like it was Rav Simi. So he was double checking, is that who it was? But he wasn't looking up at him because Rav never looked up. Mm-hmm. So Rashi says that it says somewhere that Rav never looked up. Where does it say that? It says on the Esa Mil D'Chasidusa, Shano Agbaham Rav. So that also indicates that Rashi had this manuscript.
He never looked up?
That's what it says there.
How did he do
Kiddush Lavana? That's a good kasha.
Yes, for sure. Classes.
I don't know. That sounds like a Ramona Quimby kasha. Okay.
I was in Tel Aviv in the train station last week with my wife, and there was a guy walking constantly, and he looked like he was blind. He was with his wife. Mamish did not look up.
I
the picture still in my mind of someone Mamish Shmir's the Shmir Sinai was on a whole different level.
Okay.
He's a descendant of Rab.
I'll tell you an interesting story. Somebody just told me a few weeks ago. A friend of mine who used to be a rav in Buffalo, New York, so somebody who lived in the city was making a chasana out of town. So, you know, he was describing how, you know, you know, when you're an out-of-town rabbi, so you got to do everything. So he was making this chasana in a hotel. He was responsible for kashering the kitchen, you know, and making, and he also was supposed to be in the Masada Kedushin. It was a little bit of a complicated procedure, and he was the only rabbi anywhere. The guy said to him, you know, I used to live in Brooklyn and I had a rabbi who was my neighbor, so I'm going to be inviting my neighbor also. That's nice. Okay, what was your neighbor's name? Israel Belsky. So I said, oh, okay. He should be inside the Kedushin. He was very happy when Rav Belsky came. He said, can I take you through the kitchen? Let me show you what I did and you can tell me what I could do better. Rav Belsky was, you know, the state of the art for that. So Rav Belsky came in, and he was very helpful, and they had agreed that he would be Masada the Kedushin. Now, it was not such a firm wedding, and, the attire, the way the people were dressed was not what you're accustomed to by a firm wedding. He told me that Rav Belsky came into the room, and he had come from Brooklyn to Buffalo to be at this chasana. He said to my friend, he said, you have to be Masada the Kedushin. And he went over to the wall. He stood facing the corner of the room, facing the wall. And he stood that way the whole time through the chuppah. He never turned around and faced the crowd. He looked like a meshugana, but achal pi kein. And he got called up for a bracha. So when he got called up for a bracha, he turned around and he went like this and he walked up to the chuppah and he just made his bracha and then he went back. And the... Yeah, that's what?
Which Rav in Buffalo was
it? Moshe Taub.
Yeah.
You know him?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Speak to him every week.
Okay. All right, so I'm trying to remember what was I. Yes, we just mentioned this Rashi in Menachos. It's an interesting Maramakim Lagabe, the Milut Chassidusa. But in this document, whatever you want to call it, the Milut Chassidusa, so it says that each of the 10 were taken over by the Talmidim. So it says this Talmud did this one, this Talmud did that one. But the most fascinating part is that when it comes to the thing about not looking around, that he didn't look to the sides, he didn't look forward. So it said that two Talmidim took over that practice, Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes was blind, that's right. Who else was blind? Yeah, you remember who else among the Amoraim was blind?
That's a beauty. No?
Rav Yosef.
Right.
These are the two Talmidim. And what it says in this document is that the two of them took over the practice of not looking around, and they saw that it was too hard, they weren't able to maintain it, so they blinded themselves.
Wow.
Now, what does that mean? I don't know. The words are v'simu einehem, or v'simu es atzmam. They made themselves sumas. Mm. I don't know. Maybe it means they dive into Hashem to take away. I don't know. They were blind. All of Ashas, we see Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes were blind, right? The Gemara in Arvei Pesachim talks about how, were they allowed to be mighty people in Magid, because they were sumas. There's a discussion in the Gemara about Summa Patam and Mitzvahs, and in the famous Gemara where Rav Yosef says that I used to think that if people would tell me that Allah is like Rabbi Huda, the Summa Patam and Mitzvahs, I would celebrate. But now when I heard that Gadol Mitzvah Ma'aseh Yosef Mishenu Mitzvah Ma'aseh, so I would celebrate if you tell me that Allah is not like Rabbi Huda, because Rabbi Huda said that Summa Patam and Mitzvahs. This Gemara about Rav Yosef talking about the Allah of the Summa and how he would celebrate, is in Kedushin around Daf Lamed, I think, Lamed Aleph maybe. The Ran on that Gemara is discussing which Summa is Rabbi Yehuda talking about. Did Rabbi Yehuda mean Dafka somebody who was born blind, or even somebody who becomes blind later? Because there's a mission in Brachas where it said where Rabbi Yehuda, the same time Rabbi Yehuda says that Mishali Rama Iris Miyam of Lo Yifres Al Shema, that you can't be mighty people on the bracha of Yisrael Ma'aris if you never saw the sun.
Light.
But that indicates that if you did see it, that's only Lo Yifres Ma'aris Miyam. But somebody who became blind in midlife sounds like he could be mighty others. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's assuming how can we might see others. Maybe he'll tell me, no, Rabbi Yehuda, when he said assume is patam and amitzvahs, he only meant somebody who's born blind. Zok d'ran, no, I know that's not true, because everybody knows the story about Rabbi Yosef and Rav Sheshes, that they're Rabbi Yehuda's sumas, and they became blind in midlife. K'dematzinu ba'agada, as we find in the Agada, that they weren't able to maintain Rav's practice, so they went and they simu einehem. So he quotes this document, and he says Masinu ba'agada. He doesn't give a maramakam. He doesn't say it's a medrash bereishis rabba or it's a Yerushalmi. He just says Masinu ba'agada. But he refers to this story, which is found in this document, which was published in the Shari in this collection of tshuvas from the Ga'inim, that as a milu dechsedusa shenag b'hem rav. And over there we find this practice of Yosef and Rav Sheshes.
They count that as two.
Right, and they count that as two because they didn't look to the sides and look in front of them.
What does he base some of these minhagim on?
He like, felt like, that these like were chassidus. It's a minhag of chassidus.
Why? Where did he get that from? Like, why is that a minhag of chassidus?
Well, probably the simplest explanation would be like we were just talking about before, Shemir Sinai, and there's like, where the world is so full of things that are inappropriate to look at. So if you always look down, then you never see something that's inappropriate. The truth is that maybe it's more than that. A different discussion. Well, that's the Pashup Shat probably. One of the very interesting ones that it says over there, I mentioned the last thing, the Hayakuli Arev, and he was Yod Lifnei Ateva, that he liked to daven for the, he would often daven for the Amud. Davening for the Amud, being Yod Lifnei Ateva, had a different connotation then than it does now. Nowadays, the words are pretty much fixed, right? There's a Siddur, there's no Sakhashna Siddur, no Sakhsarit Siddur, but pretty much the words are fixed, certainly within one shul. Everybody knows what you're going to say, and it's just a matter of getting up and saying it. But once upon a time, the nusach of the tefillahs were less kavua, and that was part of the job of a, it's clear in a lot of Gemaras that somebody would be yerid lefnei ateva in front of this atan or that atan, and the Gemara would say that he would say this, and the atan wouldn't be sad, you know, wouldn't be pleased with that. Or sometimes they would be pleased with that, but the chazan had more of a dynamic job. So it says here that he was yerid lefnei ateva. There's a Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah that says about Rav that he made a nusach of musaf for Rosh Hashanah. It talks about the tkiyasa de Rav. So it means, at the very least, it means that he made up a nusach for the bracha of Sheifreis. Does it mean only that bracha, or does it mean the whole musaf? Not sure. But he made up some of the musaf of Rosh Hashanah. There's a Yerushalmi in Brachos where it says that Rav made up the Moedim de Rabbanon, something we say every day. Shami says they came from Rav. Mm-hmm. And then there's another tefillah that we have from Rav. The Gemara in Brachas, Talmud Bavli in Brachas, where it's Daf Tazayin Yud Zayin, it talks about Basar Desayim Tzloise, that has a long list of tefillahs that various Amirayim said Basar Desayim Tzloise after they would finish their davening. So one of them is Lekayin Tzor L'Shein Mirosh, Vasayim B'davim Mirav, V'lamkalalai Nafshisidim, right? That's what we say. I don't remember which Amir that's from. That's one of the things that the Amirim would say Basar Desayim Tzloise. But it has a collection of, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so tefillahs that people would say at the end of their Shemana Esrei. Rav's tefillah that he would say at the end of his Shemana Esrei was Teilanu Chaim Shalshalim, Chaim Shalbracha, Chaim Shalparnasa, Chaim Shalchilas Hatzamis, etc. It didn't have the line at the beginning about it wasn't about Rosh Chodesh. But that tefillah of Rav with the Chaim Shal this and Chaim Shal that, that was his Basad Masayim Tzloisei. And at some point it got adopted as a tefillah to say by Rosh Chodesh benching. Mm-hmm. So they added at the beginning the words and then the rest of it is the Nusach of Rav's tefillah. And then there's the last line where some Siddurim, it says at the end of that tefillah, B'tzchus tefillas Rav. And in some it says that some people say B'tzchus tefillas Rabim. What do either of those? Now the funny thing is then in the art scroll Siddur, so you're giving yourself away. The art scroll, I don't know where I got this chiddush from, but the art scroll Siddur is machalik between the Nusach Ashkenaz and the Nusach Svard. Hmm. In the Nusach Ashkenaz, they leave out that line altogether.
Right.
And in their Nusach Svard Siddur, it says, B'schus tefilas Rav / Rabim.
Right.
I don't know why they, but anyway, but where does this come from? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, it's clear, it's Rav's tefillah. So, it's B'schus, B'schus doesn't mean anything. He says that somebody wrote in the Siddur, so at one point a printer was mm-hmm. making footnotes, and he said, Brachas Tfilas Rav. It's a Gemara in Brachas, and it's Rav's Tfilah. And then a subsequent printer said, Brachas, he changed the rage to a Zion, and it became Bizchus Tfilas Rav. And then another printer thought, Bizchus Tfilas Rav, what does that mean? He didn't know the Gemara in Brachas, because they took away the word Brachas. So he said, no, maybe it means, since we're all davening together, so he changed it to Bizchus Tfilas Rav. And he said, they're all nonsense, and you should just leave it out. That's the right way to say it. This is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan is in Hilchos Rosh Chodesh. I don't know, tough chaf, maybe tough yirches, something like that. That's what he says, and I think it seems very plausible. So I'm not sure why, you know, if the Poskim said that this is a nonsensical thing to say, so Arsul decided, okay, only Nusach Svar should say it. I don't know what to make of that. But be that as it may, it is Tfilas Rav Lamaisa. That's part of this, you know, Nil the Chassidusa that he was Yerid Lefnei Ateva. He made Tfilas.
He probably took it from some old Siddurim that they found.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
It's like the Mitzvah Magdil.
Right. There's a similar story there. Okay, getting back to our sort of our starting point, we said that, you know, the Rambam writes this about Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Ramban in Parshas Kedoshim says this about Rav Chiya. And that's just a mystery, Al-Gabi mystery. Where did he get that from? It's unknown. And I don't know. But just an interesting ha'ara. The Rambam, again and again, he refers to Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh.
What do I mean again and again? Meaning both in Hilchas Deis about the Sichah Beteila and also in Hilchas Tefillin when he says that he didn't go without Tefillin. He says, Rab Tam Rabbein Rakadish, which is a significant line because, you know, when the Kesef Mishnah originally says, I learned my Sasi case, I don't know where this comes from, but I know a Gemara that says it about someone else. So, you know, you might have said, okay, so in our Rambams it says Rav, but maybe that's a mistake in the Rambam, and it really means, really he wrote Rabbi Yechem and Mitzake, maybe there's a printing error. But you can't say that, because he wrote out this whole description. He said, don't get me wrong who I mean, Rav Tam Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So the emphasis is that in that line of the Rambam, there's a little bit of a chiddush. Rav was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. I don't know where it says that in the Gemara. The Rambam says it in three places. These two, where he talks about Rav, and the Rambam is like Dama to the Mishnah Torah, where he goes through all of the day race of the Tanaim and Amoraim, and who are the Talmud of whom. He says over there that Rabbeinu HaKadosh had 10 great Talmidim, and one of them was Rav. He lists 10, 11 maybe. He lists 11 Talmidim of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and he mentions Rav on that list. But it's not so clear where he got that from. But the Rambam held that Rav is the Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. But if you ask anybody that like has a little familiarity with Gemara, you know, who was Rav Talmud of? The simple answer is Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya was Rav's uncle. He was a double uncle. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us that he was his uncle twice because Rav's mother was Rav Chiya's sister. And Rav's father was Rav Chiya's brother. Mm. But they weren't sister and brother with each other. Each of them was a half-sibling with Rav Chiya.
Right.
So, and the Gemara tells that when Rav came back from Babel Teres Yisrael, both of his parents had died, and he had to employ a sort of a clever method of how to break this news to Rav Chiya. But anyway, but he was a Talmud of Rav Chiya. And Rav Chiya was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Rambam says that somehow he was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh also. Okay, but he's more...
Say Rav Tano Pollock.
That's right, so right.
That would mean that he would make more sense that he's a Talmud of...
Okay, that's true. Maybe that's where the Rambam got it from. That's another one of those things that people consider a mystery. That people try to find a makar. Where did the Rambam see the Rav of the Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh? But a number of Achrenim say that if the Rambam keeps on emphasizing Rav was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, each time that he says this, he doesn't just say Amar Lav al Rav, but he says Amar Lav al Rav, Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Maybe the implication is that Rav was knowing this way, but where did Rav get it from? He got it from Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Even though we don't find these things about Rabbeinu HaKadosh, but of course Rabbeinu HaKadosh was the master of Prishas. He was the one that was Zakav Eser Esav, and he says that, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know that with all these 10 fingers, I never got any anah from Olam Hazeh. So he was a tremendous parush. So the Rambam seems to be making a point of connecting these practices of Rav back to his Rebbe Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Mm-hmm. Now, so the only ha'ara that I have is that if Rav was knowing this way, and Rabbeinu HaKadosh was knowing this way, and Rav got it from Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it's quite likely that Rav Chiya was also knowing this way, because he was the intermediary between Rav and Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rav was primarily a Talmud of Rav Chiya, who was primarily a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. It's a chiddush that Rav also had some personal shaykh. The Rambam says he had some personal shaykh of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, but it was much more directly a Talmud of Rav Chiya. So if somehow we know it's true about Rav, and we know it's true about Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it's mistaber that it was true about Rav Chiya also.